We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Did Le'Veon's holdout affect the locker room, affect the wins losses last year?
Maybe. You know, we would have loved to have Le'Veon on the team.
Of course.
1,000%. Yeah, I think it is. I think we're going to be able to just literally focus on who's on the locker room, who's on in there.
Right.
Because now, my boy, I love AB. He's with the Raiders.
Right.
I love Le'Veon. He's with the Jets. You know what I'm saying? So now we can just really figure out what we got going on. James be the best version of himself. Juju be the best version of himself. And defense step up. And Ben, you know, come out and ball.
That was Joe Hayden on the NFL Network's Rich Eisen show yesterday. And, you know, three wooden ruler slaps on the hand for me. That was going on while I was prepping, but I did not have time to turn it around to talk about it today. I know the morning show guys brought this up. Did you hear that? 3 seconds, basically, of silence when asked if the Le'Veon Bell situation, not even a holdout necessarily so much as it was a guy who just didn't report, wasn't under contract, didn't show up, didn't sign his contract. Did it affect you? Pause. Maybe. That doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement of it being not a big deal, right? That doesn't sound like Joe Hayden just saying, no, didn't affect us in the slightest. No, what are you talking about? And then the second clip there you heard from him was essentially saying, what is it going to be like not having those guys around? Yeah, they're really good, but come on, this is going to be a lot better without them here, right? And Hayden, I mean, I think Hayden's an extremely smart guy and knows what to say. And you notice he managed to do a bunch of different things in that second clip. One is say, I love those guys that are gone. AB, he was a great player. But now James just gets to do his thing without the specter of Le'Veon Bell hanging over him. And Juju gets to do his thing without anybody worrying about Mr. Big Chest. And then Ben gets to go ball out at the end there, which is sort of like the last part of that, I think, is, yeah, and now Ben doesn't have to deal with it either, which we don't have to rehash, like, how much was he responsible for it, yes or no. I think we've already covered that ground enough. I find this really interesting. And by the way, the time is 4:08, time brought to you by Goodrich and Geist here on The Fan. You're listening to the PM team. Andrew's off for the week, and we hope he has a very relaxing vacation. I think this is another continuation in something I'm just not positive I agree with. Like, it seems too good to be true. It seems like something that you say as a team when you know that you might not be as talented as in previous years. Joe Hayden is essentially saying, oh yeah, we lost an all-time great receiver, and we lost a super talented running back. But we have very good facsimiles of both, we feel, waiting in the wings. Juju already proved it with his receiving yardage total. And Connor, when he was right, gave you a 5 or 6 game stretch that was comparable to anything Le'Veon Bell's ever done. Except I don't think anybody, even the most skeptical Steelers fan, unless you're like unless you have a hatred for Bell and Brown both that borders on delusional, would look you in the eye if you ask them and say, oh yeah, I think Connor and Smith-Schuster are better players. I think they are guys that are going to show you that you're not going to miss AB and Le'Veon Bell at all. They're basically doing, Joe Hayden is doing a variant of something I think fans have done. I think talking heads have done. People in our positions, I guess I would count as a talking head, and some people would say, well, with the size of your head, that's all you are. And that's, I think that he's falling back on a familiar trope, and that's the whole less is more addition by subtraction. I'm not going to say it in those negative of terms, but those guys not being around, even though it doesn't seem like it could be on paper, will be a net good for us. Do you really buy that? I wonder if, as a Steelers fan, in your heart of hearts, you actually search your heart how you feel about this, right? How it gets you. You know they drafted Devin Bush, and their defense absolutely should be better, but frankly, that's unconnected to this. It's connected a little bit to the Brown trade, because if they don't execute the Brown trade and get one of the picks, they don't move up to get Devin Bush. I get all that. So that begets Devin Bush being a Pittsburgh Steeler. Fine. Do you believe, though, what these guys are selling? Do you believe what all the talking heads seem to be saying? Vegas thinks the Browns are the favorite to win the division by virtue of the fact that they have, on paper, the most talented team. That usually was a designation given to the Steelers. On paper, they're the most talented team. That is why they are the smart pick to win. They've got better players. So they're going to have those better players win out. And people, I think, when that was the case, I mean, sometimes it worked, but I think people, when that was the case, fell back on that. Hey, we've got the best guys. Yeah, we're dysfunctional, but those guys, when the rubber meets the road, when the chips are on the table, they all perform. The only reason the Steelers had a puncher's chance in that game against Jacksonville a couple years ago was because talent for talent, as talented as that Jacksonville defense was, with Bryant and Bell and Brown and Ben, they had better players, period. And they were just making plays. As Joe Hayden said, they were all doing what he said Ben needed to do this year, and that was ball out. They didn't win. But you saw what talent could do. And now, because the shoe is on the other foot, it gets to me, it seems to me that people are really, and I mean really, leaning into and embracing this idea that less will be more. And I guess that is my chief reason for skepticism here about this team. And I think the Steelers could still go like 9-7, maybe even sneak in at 10-6 and actually make the playoffs. But I think the Browns are going to be a team that's surprisingly strong. I do. I am very skeptical of the idea that when you subtract, I know Bell wasn't there last year, but when you subtract, in Brown's case, a guy that is still at the top of his profession, regardless of what the ratings people at EA Sports say, that he's only a 98. It's so hard for me to conceptualize subtracting a guy of that level of skill and production from this outfit and saying it's going to be better. It just is. When you factor in the additions Cleveland made, they have Beckham. They, controversially, have Kareem Hunt. They have people that other teams covet. If you're making your Steelers depth chart of players like that would no doubt about it start, like Juju, Ben, and that's about it on offense for sure, right? Look at their wide receivers. Who definitively is a top two guy for another team outside of Juju? I thought so. Look at the running back situation. Most teams have a platoon of some sort. The concept of the feature back, as has been well documented, is sort of a dying thing. But on how many teams, is in most of those platoons, there is an A guy and a B guy, right? There is a player that is thought to be better, whether it's for stylistic purposes or just production purposes. There's a guy that people think is the better player. Does Connor crack the top 10 of that? Pro Football Focus did their top 10 running backs list, and I don't believe he was on it. I did a quick perusal of that. He didn't make that one. I'm sure if I looked at the wide receivers list, Smith-Schuster would pop up on it. But I don't know. I look at them and I don't see the kind of depth of talent on that side of the ball. I see question marks, and I see a quarterback who's got to spin it all into gold and make it all work. It feels like I understand the players. I understand Joe Hayden as a team leader doing it. He's going on TV. He's not going to say, man, we are screwed. We lost Brown. Bell isn't walking through that door. He's a New York Jet. We are in deep trouble, man. What is Ben going to do when Juju gets triple-teamed? Moncrief? Pfft. Like, he's not going to say that. But I feel like because maybe the Browns are the team here that has stockpiled all this talent, and just people do not for the life of them believe that Cleveland can actually make it happen, that everyone is just falling back on the idea that the Steelers, because people are going to get along better, because people are going to be free to spread their wings and do their thing, are going to be the better team. By the way, I'm looking at Pro Football Focus's list, top 10 receivers in football. Guess who's not on it? Juju. Guess who still is on it, coming off of an enormous down year by his standards? AB, at number 5. Guess who's also on it ahead of AB? Odell Beckham Jr., who plays for, are you following me here? The Cleveland Browns. It feels, I think that this is a situation where the Steelers shouldn't get the benefit of the doubt that because players who are very productive and talented are now fully gone, permanently banished from the team, if you will, I don't think they should get the benefit of the doubt that they're just going to make it work, that they're just going to become a situation where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts and everything's hunky-dory. There's a reason talent is coveted. There's a reason that the Jets, negotiating against themselves, still gave Le'Veon Bell like decent money in the open market. There's a reason that the Raiders, even though Antonio Brown was thought of as radioactive by some people, still were willing to trade some draft capital for him. It's because they're that good. The Steelers might end up making me eat my words this year. Might go 12-4. They might, you might see like this renaissance year like none other from Ben Roethlisberger, where he is just spreading the ball around, and it's a happy-go-lucky group of pass catchers, and Mike Munchak's loss as offensive line coach is not felt, and everything's good. But you might not. There's a very real possibility that it's not going to shake out that way, and I just don't get the sense, as training camp is a couple days away, that people buy that. So you know what I'm going to do here? I am going to open the phones coming up next. I am. 412-928-9370. Do you really buy the idea that less is more for the Steelers offensively? That is what I'm curious about. And I want you to say it like with your brain and not your heart. Because your heart, I'm sure, tells you, yeah, Brown was a dastardly dude, and Bell, good riddance to both of them. Does your brain say the same thing when you dispassionately look at it? Does Juju, James Washington, Dante Moncrief, Deontay Johnson, and Ryan Switzer strike the same kind of fear in the heart that the Killer Bees did? 412-928-9370. Joe Hayden said it. A lot of other people have said it. Everybody seems to be towing this. Less is more. We all get along now, and that's going to add up to more wins for the Steelers. I just don't see it. Make your case to me why I should. You can text us as well on the Edgar Snyder and Associates fan text line at 412-928-9370. Edgar Snyder reminds you to text responsibly. It's the PM team on the fan. You can follow us on Twitter at 937TheFan, driven by Shorkey Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Locations North Huntington and the North Hills. So I opened up the lines. Why not? Because I sounded off. And I said, I hear Joe Hayden, who I respect in that Steelers room. I think a calm, measured guy who probably, he strikes me as one of those players who, when he talks, you listen. He doesn't talk a ton. He came in, a guy from Cleveland, and maybe didn't want to do like the whole, I'll take over as a leader. I just got here role. And he's saying essentially that, minus Antonio Brown, and now for good, minus Le'Veon Bell, the Steelers will be greater. They'll be fine. It's going to help them. And so I just said it just didn't pass the smell test at all for me. It really didn't. I just couldn't, and I can't still, with training camp a couple days away, I can't embrace this idea that just because guys who didn't get along with some of their teammates or had a little bit of beef, even though a lot of those teammates have praised them, as Hayden did, just because they're gone doesn't mean everything automatically gets better. And that has made me a bit of a pariah for months now, with people lining up to tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. Hey, their defense is better. Hey, this. Hey, that. I feel like this is one of those times where the Steelers actually have to prove it. And I know that sounds ridiculous that I'm giving the Browns the division and I'm going to predict them to win the division because they're the Browns. They should be the team that has to prove it. But they have the talent. They're the team that stockpiled it. They've got questions on defense, but they don't have questions on offense other than can they protect Baker Mayfield and keep him healthy? Because all those guys are healthy. I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. The Steelers, I got to see it. Phone number is 412-928-9370. And I want to go to Brian. Hello, Brian.
What's going on?
Hey.
Well, I don't know. I said I seen where you're coming from, but I think the top professionals on that team, the offensive line, I think they're going to let the new guys get enough traction where I'm hoping that that's going to have a lot to do with settling these young guys in, and they may just be the best rushing team coming in the league.
So wait, I have two questions I would offer to that. One, how much of their offensive line success did you put towards or did you attribute to Mike Munchak? Because, my goodness, I have heard people describe him as variously like a genie and a soothsayer as far as offensive lines go. People can't believe that he would have left to take a lateral job in Denver. I mean, I know it was family reasons, but whatever.
Right.
Do you believe that Munchak was a huge part of them being good?
Well, I believe we'll find out soon enough. I don't know. We still have the same guys.
It's the same guys, but let me put it this way. If you believe, and I think a lot of people do, maybe you do, maybe you don't, Brian, you're going to take a wait-and-see approach, fine. I don't have that luxury. If you're somebody, though, that sang the praises of Mike Munchak over and over again, I would have a hard time then saying the offensive line will still be a strength because you would think Munchak leaving and Sean Surratt, no matter how good he is, no matter how good he is and how much he studied at the foot of Munchak, he's not Munchak. So if you thought the coach was a big part of the group's success, yeah, they have really good players. Yeah, DeCastro's especially great, and they're veteran and they're tested, and Marcus Gilbert maybe didn't want to be there, and so now he's gone, great, whatever. I don't know. If the coach was a big part of it, the coach being gone would seem to be a pretty big problem that would preclude them being as consistent as they were. Antoine's in Wilkinsburg. What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
I just want to say that I believe that the Steelers will be just fine without Bell and Brown. Last year, if you don't recall, Ben pushed a lot of balls to Brown, and that was a lot of reason for the interceptions he threw. So I think without him to push the ball to certain people and spread it around, I think it'll be just fine.
All right, so the defense will come around. Hold on, though, to that point. I know he led the league in red zone picks with four, and all four of them, I believe, the target was Brown on the play. But it sounds good if you're making your argument, Antoine, to say what you said there. Like, it sounds good to say, well, it's because Brown demanded the ball and whatever. And I'll even allow that throwing the ball to that guy probably wasn't always something Roethlisberger wanted to do. He just tried to minimize his headaches. But you saw some of the throws the same as I did. Some of them were just not good throws at all. It's not that he's forcing it to him. It's that the ball isn't where it's supposed to be. And isn't it? And here's the other thing I would say to that, and thanks for the call. We all agree the quarterback has the most power of anybody in the organization at this point, right? I think really in any professional football franchise, if you have a franchise-level quarterback, a guy that's eventually going to be in Canton like Roethlisberger is, that person, by definition, has to wield more clout than anybody else. If he really didn't want to throw Antonio Brown the ball, because he said, this is stupid, I'm not placating this guy anymore when he's triple-teamed, when it's a bad business decision, he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. That's just a fact, I would think. So on some level, he had to understand, and I think Roethlisberger did understand this, even forcing this guy the ball can be a really good idea because he's that good. I never hear anybody talking about, like, oh, he forced him the ball in game one against Cleveland in 2017 when he chucked up a jump ball. Brown went and got it on second down and probably saved their bacon in that game. Only the negative now. We've got Sean on the fan who's going to advocate or make his case why the Steelers are going to be better than the Browns, and my fears are unfounded here.
Hi, Chris.
What's up?
Hey, so I think the three most important things, with football teams, the quarterback, the coach, and the offensive line. And I just really feel like we're, a little bit above the Browns.
The coach nobody knows about up there. And
right.
You're one of the first people I've heard recently actually advocate for Mike Tomlin. I think he gets too much flack, but game day he does leave something to be desired.
Well, agreed, but also – we just have no, we have no track record with Kitchen. So, just like, and the only thing we can really go by is just like our track records of good teams. We've had 57 wins. They've had like 11 or 17 in the past 5 years. So I would trust the quarterback, the coach, the organization to be able to put the pieces around Ben and the line better than the Browns. That's where I'm coming from.
I don't know, because the Browns, if you look at it on paper, have put the pieces around Baker Mayfield in a big way. And the only question is, do all the personalities mesh? One that has been very... And my problem, I guess, with like the people being so skeptical of the Browns in this city, I understand because you're Steelers fans, duh. But it feels like it's not based in reality. The Steelers, when guys weren't always getting along hunky-dory, played really well to the degree that they won 13 games a couple seasons ago. So their talent overshadowed whatever drama was caused by the talented people. So why would you say that the other team now that has all that talent can't do the same thing? Like, one of the things about Mayfield that everybody says is that he gets players to rally around him. At the very least, they're getting a honeymoon year from Odell Beckham, are they not? At the very least. Probably more than that, because I suspect if Odell Beckham's a little leery of playing in Cleveland versus New York, I suspect when he starts getting hit between the numbers with passes 30 yards down the field, instead of having Eli Manning throwing wobbling ducks up to him all the time that he has to one hand behind his back, I think he's going to actually like his life. I think he's going to say, this is pretty great. This is how the other half lives. The grass is greener in the dog pound. I'm just saying. Up next, I have two different things. I was going to go with two different ideas here, but then there has been, since I started the show today 2.5 hours ago, there has been something that I sort of sloughed off in the beginning of the show, and I said I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about it, and almost from the moment I said that, I started thinking about this thing, and I got more angry about it the more I thought about it, and I got more frustrated by it the more I thought about it. And then I talked to Jason Mackey about it, and I got even more frustrated by it. And I'm going to vent that frustration and explain what it is that has been gnawing at me for the last 2 hours or so, coming up next.
Clayton's shown the ability to get anybody out when his command's in place. And obviously it got in a situation where he got the two strikes. He's one pitch away from getting a ground ball or getting him out. He didn't make a pitch. Goldschmidt hit out of the ballpark.
That was Clint Hurdle saying that Vasquez wasn't available by way of giving Clay Holmes props, you know, when he's making his pitches, which is a weird thing to say when a guy had walked and hit a batter preceding Paul Goldschmidt's granny. I said in the open to the show that I was not going to lock in on some of the minutia from last night's game. Like Ponce de Leon being really bad for the most, but the numbers didn't bear it out. Not hitting his spots, but managing to get out of it in the first inning when they had the bases loaded. He throws 86 pitches in 3 innings. Or the sacrifice bunt late from Diaz. That I wasn't going to dwell on that stuff, on the little things that make up any baseball game. But honestly, I cannot, in good conscience, let slide the fact that Felipe Vasquez didn't pitch. After pitching 2 days in a row on the weekend and throwing, what, I think it was 35 pitches? And he wasn't available to you? But Clay Holmes was? Jason Mackey said, in his opinion, he doesn't think it's like a Neil Huntington in the shadows saying, hey, you've got to keep these guys rested. He said it was a Clint Hurdle, Felipe Vasquez decision. If it was, man, shame on them. I think Vasquez is a want-the-ball kind of guy. I don't think Vasquez sloughed off this. I think he would have taken the ball. Did they not feel like last night was a pivotal game? I know there's another Clint Hurdle clip where he says, hey, the games keep coming, I just keep going. And Clint Hurdle's got the whole shower well mantra because he understands better than the outside world that a season is 162 games. He's got to understand, though, that some of those 162 mean more than others, especially games where you're trying to chase down a division opponent. Those count double. A win for you immediately becomes a loss for them. You don't have to watch the scoreboard and see what they're doing. So if you've got a chance, to use your best available arm to try to get you a scoreless 10th so that you can hopefully get a run in and win the game in the bottom half of the inning. Don't you do it there? Where's the sense of urgency? Where is the idea that we're not going to just leave a guy on the cooler? That this game matters a lot. That we understand that it matters a lot, and that we're going to treat it like it matters a lot, even though it's only the third week in July. I saw none of that. And I really did intend to not make a big stink about it, because I just figured, like, the big picture aspects of last night's loss, the larger meaning of it, what it says about both franchises yet again, what that Holmes-Goldschmidt showdown really says about both teams. Because the Cardinals are always a fascinating measuring stick to use against the Pirates, or to use just whenever the Pirates are concerned. I thought those were the more relevant stories. And in a lot of ways, I think they are. But then I come back to this and say, what if he uses Vasquez? Vasquez gets out of the inning and scoreless because he's not Clay Holmes, and you win the game. I'm literally having a totally different conversation right now. I'm talking about how Josh Bell played hero after he doubled in Starling Marte, maybe. Right? I'm talking about how the Pirates gutted one out when they absolutely had to have one against the Cardinals, reeled them in a game closer, made up a game on the Cubs, and got to continue this little dance for another day. That's what I would be talking about. Who knows if Clint Hurdle actually makes Vasquez available and pitches them, if it works out. But I have a pretty good sense of what wasn't going to work out, and that was Clay Holmes pitching. And that, I want to play this again for you from Clint Hurdle. This just feels like a very feeble defense after the fact of this.
Clayton's shown the ability to get anybody out when his command's in place. And obviously it got in a situation where we got the two strikes. He's one pitch away from getting a ground ball or getting him out. He didn't make a pitch. Goldschmidt hit out of the ballpark.
I'm going to do something here. And that is dig up. So one more time, here's the very first part of that clip.
Clayton's shown the ability to get anybody out when his command's in place.
Okay. I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it. Clay Holmes' game logs, the last three games he's pitched, he's given up 7 runs. He's walked 4 hitters. He's hit a hitter. It would seem to me that in a total of 4 innings of work, one of which was a 2-inning shutout appearance in garbage time against the Cubs, it would seem to me that Clay Holmes isn't hitting his spots, isn't commanding his stuff, isn't he can get anybody out. It's that he can't get anybody out is the actual story of his last two. That was very bad. He's given up, I'll just go the last 2 appearances, 2 innings worth of baseball, 7 hits, 7 runs, all of them earned, 2 strikeouts, 3 walks, and a grand slam, and a hit by pitch. He did that all in 17 batters total. Fully over a third of the batters that stepped up to the plate against Clay Holmes, his last 2 outings scored. Yesterday was, I think, to most people, like the Pirates' last stand. I said it was on the air. That's how I felt about the game. That they were almost in backs against the wall mode. They needed to rip off a bunch of wins quickly, post-haste. Trade deadline's coming, and there's no waiver deadline. You've got one chance. You have one deadline to decide, is my team worth upgrading, worth stripping down, or worth standing pat for? And that's it. Apparently no one got the memo. Because in no universe, I don't care if Felipe Vasquez, maybe you're worried about rest and recovery. He threw 2 days in a row. Do the rest and recovery thing somewhere else. Clay Holmes wasn't it last night, in principle or in practice. And I wish somebody would have gotten the memo in the Pirates' dugout to that effect. When he picked up the bullpen phone and said, get me Holmes, they should have had say, oh, I'm sorry, the pitcher you selected is not available. Please press 5 to get Felipe Vasquez up in the bullpen. Seriously. They should have just had a voicemail on the bullpen phone. We're sorry. The mediocre reliever you have been looking for is not available. Instead, you got Clay Holmes, and what you got was a crack, as in of a bat, as in Paul Goldschmidt doing what Paul Goldschmidt traditionally does, which is getting a big hit at a big time. Hitting a ball out of the ballpark. Frustrating. And when I hear Jason Mackey, whose opinion I trust and whose knowledge and insight I trust, say that he doesn't think that's a Neil Huntington thing, he thinks that's the manager. That bugs me. So Thursday, the forecast, guess what it is? Sunny and 80. That's perfect golfing weather. I just looked. There was a bunch of actual suns on the TV weather forecast, and I was stunned by it. It's a great excuse to play a little hooky and join us. Rescheduled Fan Open Manor Valley Golf Course. You can still get in. Get your foursome in, 937thefan.com, to get your team signed up. It's going to be like the nicest golfing day of the year. So play hooky. Your boss won't care. Maybe your boss, if you offer your boss a spot, maybe they'll play hooky with you. It's brought to you, the Fan Open, by Bowser Chevrolet, Coors Light, Peace, Love, and Little Donuts, Jigger's Pub, and Penn Murray. Speaking of that weather, it's brought to you by Sun Chevy and McMurray. You can join Sun Chevy for their all-star open house all month long. Open the door to a new Chevy. Spotty thunderstorm in the Laurel Mountains, maybe the rest of the day. 75 otherwise, 55 overnight tonight, and then pleasant and warm for the next several days. Enjoy it. It never happens here. Enjoy this too. Caller 6 right now. We're just doing caller 6, Jermichael Finley. Right now, gets a pair of tickets to see Chris Stapleton at KeyBank Pavilion Saturday, August 10th. 412-928-9370. Caller 10, pair of tickets, Chris Stapleton, KeyBank Pavilion on Saturday, August 10th. I said that I wasn't going to focus on the little things from the Pirates game last night because it felt like the bigger picture was more relevant, and I'm going to tell you why I felt that way coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.